25 years ago, when I came to Berlin, Georg Kretschmar in Munich told me one should approach early Christianity regionally and from the first into the fourth or fifth century. And he said I should invite Thomas Krabel, which I did. And I asked Thomas Krabel on his work on early Jewish inscriptions and Judaism in Asia Minor. He said, well, I have never published my dissertation and it is obsolete now, because there is a young scholar from New Zealand, Paul Trebilko, who has written a book on that. Immediately I bought that book and it has been accompanying me through the years. So I'm very, very pleased to have Paul Trebilko from Otago here in Berlin. On these new publications, I would like to mention Early Christians in Ephesus, from Paul to Ignatius, and then Self-Designation and Group Identity in the New Testament. So Paul, we look forward to your presentation.
Thank you very much, Silius. And I was grateful that you mentioned the Indian Ocean as one that some of us had travelled over on our way here. The Acts of John and Christian communities in Ephesus in the mid-second century. There is a frustrating lack of explicit evidence for early Christians in Ephesus after Ignatius and on through the second century. There are no Christian apologists who write from Ephesus, and no texts that clearly address Christians in the city. And of course, there are no Christian inscriptions from this early period. The Acts of John, which I'll call AJ, is one text that may fill this gap in some way, although it has not been preserved in its entirety. Much of the activity undertaken by John in this text is set in Ephesus, although Smyrna, Miletus, Laodicea, and other cities also feature. The view that the text originates from Western Asia Minor rather than from Egypt has had growing support in recent years. Here I will seek to argue that the AJ does shed light on Christians in Ephesus in the mid-second century CE. To the content. The AJ presents the activities of John the Apostle, the son of Zebedee, primarily in Ephesus. The contents are as follows. The beginning of the text is missing, but the material that has been preserved begins with John's arrival in Ephesus and his involvement in raising Cleopatra and Lycomedes from the dead. John then rejects a painting that has been made of him, heals many elderly widows in the Ephesian theatre, destroys the temple of Artemis and converts many Ephesians, raises a priest of Artemis back to life, and converts a man who has killed his own father. John then leaves Ephesus and goes to Smyrna, where he heals Antipatros' son. A lacuna in the text follows, and when our text resumes, John travels back to Ephesus and en route stays in an inn where he sends bed bugs from his bed, and perhaps the best known incident from the text. Back in Ephesus, John is involved in the death and resurrection of Drusiana, preaches his version of the gospel, which includes what's been called the hymn of Christ, gives a final sermon and prayer, and then dies outside the Ephesian city gates. I'll not go into details here about the text and its different sections. Suffice to note that the various parts of the text exhibit stronger or weaker affinities with Gnosticism, although much depends exactly on how we define Gnosticism in any case. Date. Although the date is debated, many would now agree with a date around the middle of the second century, perhaps 150 to 160. For provenance. A provenance in Asia Minor is most likely. We cannot locate the provenance more narrowly, although I'll note that in the most recent thorough study of the issue, Peter Lallemann has argued for Smyrna. What is most significant here is that a provenance in Asia Minor suggests the author knows Ephesian Christianity. The former arguments in favour of Egypt have been most strongly put forward by Junot and Kestley, but Lallemann has convincingly shown that none of their arguments prove an Egyptian origin. A range of points argue in favour of Asia Minor. Firstly, all the events described in the AJ occur around Ephesus or nearby. Clearly, this is the area that interests the author, where he locates all of John's activity. This does not mean that the text was written in the area, but clearly it establishes this as a strong possibility. Secondly, the AJ focuses solely on the work of John the Apostle, and there are strong links between the Johannine literature and Asia Minor. And arguably the Gospel, letters and Revelation were all written in the area. Thirdly, the AJ are familiar with Charaton's Calliro, which scholars have argued originated in Asia. Fourthly, AJ demonstrates knowledge of the particular assize system in Asia Minor. Fifthly, in AJ 38, we read, after 2 days, the birthday of the idol's temple was celebrated. And in 43:10, where the birthday is questioned. This is in keeping with the belief that Artemis was born in Ephesus and that the festivals of Artemis's birthday was a key event in the city. Finally, the close relationship between AJ and the Acts of Paul and Thecla supports Asia as the provenance of AJ, since the Acts of Paul and Thecla almost certainly originated in Asia Minor. These are strong arguments, I think, in favour of a provenance in or near Ephesus, or at least accurate knowledge about Ephesus. Junot and Kestley argue against the author coming from Asia Minor on the basis of what they see as a number of inaccuracies in the text. However, Engelmann has shown that the view that the author of AJ was not familiar with Ephesus is incorrect. Engelmann and others argue that the author has good information about Ephesus and includes nothing that is out of place in the city. Firstly, in AJ 38, it is said that on the celebration of what is called the birthday of Artemis's temple, everyone was wearing white, while John wore black. Junot and Kestley claim that white garments are unknown in this situation. But in Inscription von Ephesus 27, it's said of some of the participants in Salutaris' procession that they have the place and sit near the pietas wearing white. Another fragmentary inscription suggests also they wore white garments on this occasion. Secondly, in AJ 38, it said that John went up to the temple with reference to the Artemision. Junod and Kestley argue that the use of Aniemi here is evidence that the author was ignorant of the situation in Ephesus, since the Artemision was not on a hill, but on the flat inland from the city. However, Engelmann has shown that the verb Aniemi in AJ 38 can also have the sense of to go inland, and he cites a number of examples where the verb has this sense. In the passage then, the verb means go inland or go upstream, rather than go uphill. Accordingly, the alleged mistake is removed. But it may be that the author does not come from Ephesus, but rather from a nearby city. John relates to people from Miletus and Smyrna, and so the text seems to counter any inclination to regard John as exclusively Ephesian. Lallemann thinks it's possible that the author lived in a rival city to Ephesus, perhaps Smyrna. He writes, the author was bound by the common assumption that John's main residence and place of burial were Ephesus, but the thematic discussion of the apostle's stay in diverse cities indicates a desire to connect the apostle with the rest of Asia, end of quote. There is some marginalisation of Ephesus here then, which suggests the text may have been written somewhere else in Asia, rather than Ephesus itself. This would also help to ease the difficulty that AJ presents John as involved in the destruction of the Artemision. Would someone writing in Ephesus portray the destruction of the Artemision as occurring at the foundation of the Christian community, 2 centuries at least before 262, when the temple was sacked but not destroyed? In Lallemann's view, in the 2nd century CE, someone from Ephesus is unlikely to write of the destruction of the temple, but, I quote, a person from another part of Asia would have less scruples about doing so. That John receives a much better welcome in Smyrna than in Ephesus is an additional argument in favour of Smyrna as the place of composition. When John arrives in Ephesus, he is neither invited nor welcomed by brothers from that city. By comparison, envoys from Smyrna come to Ephesus to invite John to their city, and the whole population gathers to meet him. This description is the more remarkable, says Lalemon, in view of the traditional rivalry between Ephesus and Smyrna. Thus, an origin in Asia seems to be by far the most likely, with perhaps Smyrna as the most probable candidate. In any case, it seems unlikely to have been written in Egypt. A provenance in Western Asia Minor strongly suggests the text may contain evidence about the life of the Christians in the city and elsewhere in Ionia. Before discussing this in more detail, I need to consider which New Testament books the author of AJ knows. 5. Although we cannot discuss this in detail here, it's clear that AJ knows the Synoptics and Acts. AJ also knows John's Gospel, as is shown by a number of verbal similarities between AJ and John. For example, John 13:23, with its reference to John reclining at Jesus' breast, is evoked in AJ 89, and John calls himself the one whom Jesus loved in AJ 90, recalling the expression the one whom Jesus loved in John 20. In AJ 90, John is told, "Do not be faithless, but believing," exactly the same words that are said by Jesus to Thomas in John 20:27. While there are no overt references to Paul or Paul's letters in AJ, it's very likely the author of AJ knows at least some of these letters. The most likely allusion to one of Paul's letters is in AJ 57, which reads, "John, who had been called to help, said to the Lord, 'You who always console the downtrodden and who called me to aid.'" This echoes 2 Corinthians 7:6, "But God, who consoles the downcast, consoled us by the arrival of Titus." This is a strong lexical connection. Lalemon also points to the use of the very rare word catalagma, which is twice used in AJ 56, and recalls the use of catalagae in cognates five times in 2 Corinthians. Accordingly, we can suggest that AJ knows the Synoptics and John, Acts, and at least some of Paul's letters. 6. AJ's attitude towards John's Gospel. Although AJ clearly knows the Gospel of John, it is quite different from the Gospel on many points. A key difference relates to suffering. AJ 101 is particularly important, quoted on the handout. "You have heard, you hear that I suffered, yet I suffered not. That I suffered not, yet I did suffer. That I was pierced, yet was I not wounded. Hanged, and I was not hanged. That blood flowed from me, yet it did not flow. And in a word, those things that they say of me, I did not endure, and the things that they do not say, those I suffered." The allusion to the account of the fourth gospel and the mention of piercing and the blood that flowed is clear. It's also important that the things that they say of me, that I did not endure, are clearly references to what is said in John's gospel. So we see what Attridge calls the resistance by the Acts to the plain meaning of the text of the Gospel of John. Quite how do we assess the relationship to John's Gospel then? Purvo suggests that AJ is involved in a parody of the Gospel, while Charles Hill suggests AJ is in some sense anti-Johannine. However, Attridge has argued that this does not quite do justice to the dynamics of AJ. In particular, in section C, AJ 94 to 102 and 109, John's Gospel is evoked, and I quote, "without quite the same resistance or quite the same sense of irony." Attridge notes that in John's Gospel, the crucifixion is understood, and I quote, "as a revelatory event, deriving its significance from what the potential believer sees when he or she really looks at the cross." In John's Gospel, the author seeks to lead the reader to perceive the cross in a new way, and this seeing or revelation brings amazement, healing, salvation, and so on. In this light, it can be seen that the author of AJ provides an alternative reading of the cross. As Attridge shows for AJ, the vision of the cross provides a doctrine about the meaning of suffering, cloaked here in paradoxes. Love is not the focal point of the revelation, as it is in John's Gospel. Suffering is. The reading of the significance of the cross is formally Johannine, but materially distinct from the interpretative grid of the Gospel and the readers represented by the Johannine epistles. We see then a dialectic between appropriation and overt correction of John's Gospel. The author is not so much anti-Johannine as what Attridge calls alternatively Johannine. Or we could take a lead, as he does, from AJ 102, which reads, "And I held firmly this one thing in my mind, that the Lord contrived all things symbolically and as a dispensation toward men for their conversion and salvation." AJ could then be thought of as symbolically Johannine. This takes account of the critique of the gospel in AJ, whilst also acknowledging that the foundation on which the Acts is built is decidedly Johannine. Accordingly, we conclude that AJ related to the Gospel of John, but is best seen as alternatively or symbolically Johannine. AJ takes Johannine thought in a new direction that is fundamentally different to the gospel itself. But AJ can be seen to do so whilst being in sympathy with much in the gospel and developing a theological position from that. AJ does not reject the gospel per se, but rather uses it, argues with and against it, and goes in directions that the gospel does not go. We can suggest the author of AJ is relating to readers who know the gospel well. He should not be seen as diametrically opposed to the gospel, but rather as taking readers of the gospel into new territory. But the author of AJ is replacing the gospel in the sense that for AJ, the gospel does not present the correct version of the cross or the complete understanding of suffering and of the Logos. AJ is, we can suggest, consciously writing a work that for readers should take the place of the gospel and make the gospel therefore unnecessary because it is unreliable or incomplete. It is genuinely alternatively Johannine in this sense then, in the sense that it gives an alternative to the gospel. 7. AJ's attitude towards Paul. At first, it may be thought surprising that the Acts of John does not acknowledge Paul in any way. This is particularly strange when Paul is so strongly linked with Ephesus in the Acts of the Apostles, which AJ clearly knows. Trevor Thompson has suggested that in AJ, the author is consciously combating Paul's reputation in Ephesus and seeking to replace Paul with John as the founder and key figure in the Ephesian church. This is suggested by the number of times when John in AJ is reported as doing what Paul does in the canonical texts. I'll discuss some of these points. Firstly, in AJ 112, it is said that it is John, not Paul, who is said to have been chosen for the apostleship among the Gentiles. Secondly, AJ presents John as the founder of the Christian community in Ephesus, and the text emphasizes a number of times that there were no Christians in the city prior to John's arrival there. In AJ 41, we read that John prays, "God, who are God above all so-called gods, who to this day have been despised at Ephesus." As AJ presents the situation then, John is the first person to preach the gospel in the city, which was in a terrible state before he arrived. Clearly not Paul, but John is presented as the founder of the Ephesian church in AJ. Thirdly, there are strong links between AJ 58 to 62 and the Acts of the Apostles 19 to 21. Both passages are set in Ephesus, include a list of travelling companions, a we narrative, healing via touch, and a farewell speech. Lalleman suggests one cannot help thinking that the AJ consciously has John perform the same miracles as Paul did. Fourthly, in AJ 113, John says that he was blinded by Jesus for 2 years, which prevented him from marrying. He was later given back his sight. in 113:22, he says, "Now, since I have accomplished your stewardship with which I was entrusted," recalling fairly precisely 1 Corinthians 9:17. All this echoes Paul's Damascus Road experience of being blinded, his unmarried state, and his sense of being commissioned. Fifthly, in his study, Thompson lists 14 what he calls narrative, subject, and verbal connections that he discerns between AJ 19 to 57 and the portrait of Paul in Acts or Paul's letters, and that are additional to the points I've made so far. While they're not all equally strong, the case is, I think, cumulative. Two examples are representative of these sorts of connections. Firstly, AJ 32, the whole city gathers at the theatre in Ephesus to hear John. In Acts 19:28, people from Ephesus rush to the theatre because of Paul's preaching. In two cases, a great silence descends on the crowd before John and before Paul in Acts 21. Secondly, in AJ 45, John says that I shall not leave until I have weaned you like children from the milk of the nurse. In the New Testament, only Paul uses trophos, nurse, while referring to his care for converts, 1 Thessalonians 2:7, and he describes his teaching as gala, milk, in 1 Corinthians 3:2. Thompson concludes, it is also highly probable, based upon the narrative overlaps between Paul in the Acts of the Apostles and John in the Acts of John, that the author of the Acts of John have used Paul's legacy in the Acts of the Apostles in constructing their portrait of John. Accordingly, we see a strong trend throughout AJ. What Paul does in the canonical texts, John does in the Acts of John. Why does AJ present John in this way? Firstly, we can reaffirm how strong the connection is between Paul and Ephesus in the New Testament and in other texts, and these are listed on your handout. New Testament texts, as well as Ignatius, where Ignatius says of the church in Ephesus, you are fellow initiates of Paul, and the Acts of Paul, which gives the tradition that Paul stayed in Ephesus at the home of Aquila and Prisca and recounts various incidents that happened in the city. Clearly, Paul is strongly associated with Ephesus, and many of these texts testify to the success of his ministry in the city. Yet, as Thompson concludes, despite all the attention allotted to the city of Ephesus and Ephesian Christianity in the Acts of John, there is no mention of Paul or his prior missionary labours in the city or elsewhere. The silence is remarkable and stands in sharp contrast to other early Christian sources. In AJ, in place of Paul, we have John. What Paul does in Acts, John does in the Acts of John. Further, John regularly outperforms Paul. For example, Paul is instrumental in one resurrection in Acts, Eutychus, but John is involved in eight resurrections in the Acts of John. With regard to the cult of Artemis, Paul in Acts leaves Ephesus after conflict with the silversmiths and the people of Ephesus over Artemis. By contrast, John voluntarily goes to the temple of Artemis. People attempt to kill him, but he addresses them. And immediately after his speech, the altar of Artemis is split into many parts. More than seven statues fall to the ground. Half the temple collapses and the priest is killed. It seems most likely then that the author of AJ is taking on and combating Paul's reputation. He is replacing Paul with John as the founder of the Ephesian church and the key figure in its ongoing history and its life. John not only does what Paul was thought to do in other sources, but John outdoes the remembered Paul. It is not only John, not Paul, who does all the miracles, wins all these battles, is successful in evangelism and so on, but John does more miracles, wins more battles, is more successful in converting Gentiles. We can suggest that the author of AJ is combating Paul's reputation in Ephesus and replacing him with a version of John. This is also not just about who is the hero figure, but also about theology. Throughout AJ, Pauline theology is rejected in favour of what we have argued is a replacement of John's gospel, an alternatively Johannine, a symbolically Johannine theology, which can be seen to have strong Gnostic traits. A number of conclusions. Many have argued that a number of groups were present in Ephesus. It seems likely that by the time of Ignatius, there could well have existed in Ephesus the descendants of the group addressed by the pastorals who valued Paul, the descendants of the opponents of the pastorals who perhaps formed a separate group, the Johannine community addressed in the Johannine letters, and the group which has split from it, called the secessionists by the Johannine letters, perhaps descendants of the Nicolaitans, perhaps others as well. It's not unlikely that there was conflict between these groups. A number of scholars have then considered this diverse number of Christian groups in the early second century in Ephesus. Against this background, we can suggest that what is happening in the Acts of John is that one group that had a connection with John's gospel was trying to write Paul out of Ephesian church history and replace him with a version of John. For this group, it is John who is the key figure. This is not just about heroes, as I've said, but also about theology. But this does suggest that a group was favouring Paul in Ephesus at the time. It is, of course, possible that the author of the Acts of John was simply opposing the remembered Paul, or the literary Paul, the Paul they encountered in texts. But given the strength of the covert polemic against Paul, it seems more likely that AJ is trying to obliterate a significant contemporary competitor. Why denigrate Paul, admittedly covertly, to the extent we see in the Acts of John, unless someone was currently praising and endorsing him? Paul seems much more than a memory or a literary influence. We can suggest, although we can do no more than this, that Paul had contemporary supporters in Ephesus at the time the Acts of John was written. But it seems likely that, as well as taking on a group who favoured Paul, the author of AJ is taking on other interpretations of the Gospel of John. For example, as we have seen, AJ combats the presentation of the cross that is presented in the Gospel. The Act of John can be seen to be arguing for a theology that is connected to, but quite different from, the theology of the Gospel of John. The author wants John as a key figure, but he is a John who supports a quite different theology from the canonical John. This suggests that the author and readers of the Acts of John were not the only group reading the Gospel. They were attempting to correct and replace the Gospel, and it seems likely that this was against some other reading, perhaps propounded in the present by a different group. They are contesting the legacy of John with others. This may be in Ephesus itself or perhaps somewhere close by. We have seen some uncertainty about where we should locate the Acts of John, although I've argued for Western Asia Minor. But would it not have been easy to present John as visiting some other place and preaching his different gospel there, a Galatian church or Corinth, for example? Yet clearly the author has an interest in rewriting Ephesian church history and combating Paul's influence precisely in Ephesus. And so it seems unlikely the author is far removed from the city. We cannot locate him necessarily in Ephesus, but surely he has an interest in the Christian community in the city. And he wants Christianity in Ephesus to become his alternative Johannine version. All of this suggests he knows something about Christians in the city at the time he writes, and that he wishes to reinforce a particular alternative Johannine movement, to redirect a current, perhaps more orthodox Johannine movement down these tracks, and to completely oppose a Pauline community and Pauline influence. I suggest then that we see here a good deal about authority and identity in earliest Christianities. Thank you very much.